University of Colorado.
Welcome to See You on the Air, the University of Colorado's podcast. We feature faculty from across CU's four campuses and their interesting, innovative, and sometimes life-changing work.
The oldest beer I've created thus far dates to right around 1800 BCE is where I'd probably land. Somewhere coming out of the Middle Kingdom into the New Kingdom of ancient Egypt. But we have bounced around, but I've come all the way up to the present as well. I mean, my most recent beer is only 250 years old.
Welcome to See You on the Air. Today we have a special treat. We're on site at the Avery Brewing Company in Boulder. We're chatting with CU Boulder lecturer Travis Rupp about ales of antiquity, his research into the hands-on study of ancient beer. He also teaches Greek and Roman archaeology, art history, Egyptology, and Roman history at CU Boulder, and he's traveled the globe to find and recreate that centuries-old nectar of the common man. Thank you for joining us, Travis. We're happy to have you.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on today.
And this is the first time I've ever been inside a bar, so it's a double treat for me. So.
Excellent.
Win-win.
Yeah, it's exactly right.
Well, you have two unique careers in that you're a brewer and you're a college professor. How did you get into both of those, and when did they intersect?
Sure. It's a great question. I got into them probably around 9 years ago or so is when I started getting into the teaching side of things. Now, as I think a lot of us can attest to, especially in the academic world, when you start out with your first career in teaching, sometimes it's hard to get a full-time gig, and that's kind of how it began for me. I did a master's degree in classics at the University of Colorado. After I finished that, they actually luckily hired me right back to teach a couple of classes on Greek art, but that wasn't going to necessarily cut it in regards to paying the bills. And so I was out kind of looking for other career opportunities, other options that I could undertake. I ended up working for a corporate computer company for a period of time, but corporate world really wasn't for me. And my girlfriend, who is now my wife, so that all turned out really well, she was the one that actually encouraged me to get into beer, because I've been homebrewing since I was 19. Don't tell my students that, right? But since I was 19, that's when I started.
That was in another state, right?
That's right, yeah. Okay. Yeah, back in Iowa, where I'm from, and my dad got me into it. He was a mead maker and a winemaker. Bought me a homebrew kit, so I'd been doing it for a long time, and something I was always interested in. So I applied at Avery in 2012, and I started as a bartender here, actually. So I was just bartending at Avery, teaching a couple classes at the university. And it didn't take too long. Within a couple of years, both of those jobs kind of grew into full-time positions, and I am now full-time at both, and I have been for about 5 years now, so kind of holding that down. But how they mixed or how they crossed was very interesting, because when I first started working at Avery, I was just wanting to be on the beer side. I was basically keeping the occupations completely separate. And we were trying to educate our taproom staff a little bit more on beer history. And they asked me if I'd do some research on it. I said, sure, I don't really work on beer history, but I'd be down to do that. About 10 months after I started as a bartender, I moved into production and started in packaging on the packaging lines at Avery. And at that time, our production manager at the time, Matt Thrall, who's actually the production manager at Left Hand Brewing now up in Longmont, he had kind of put an all call out for anybody who wanted to do seminars for the staff at production meetings on something educational. And so I said, sure, you know, I'd be interested in doing a history talk once a month. And at first it started out as kind of this willy-nilly, whatever the guys wanted to, and gals wanted to hear about, I'd put together, you know, kind of a talk and present it and do a little 30 days of research or so on the topic. But as I started to explore it more, I started to get more curious about what I was teaching at the university. Doing a lot on ancient Greco-Roman and Egyptian worlds, I noticed there were a lot of gaps in the history, especially when it came to beer. And so as I dove deeper and deeper into it, I started realizing, wow, there really aren't even that many beer historians, if you will, in the world, something that's so impactful on our society to this day. And really quickly, the paths crossed. And shortly after that, I moved through kind of the ranks in production and became a member of what we called our special projects team. And that meant that we were basically making all the new beers that came out for Avery. And I kind of could do whatever I wanted to. And so I thought it'd be really cool to try to recreate some of these ancient beers that I was researching. And in September of 2016, we released the first one called Nestor's Cup that was an ancient Mycenaean beer dating to about 1350 BCE or so. And I'll be honest, I was being very selfish. I just wanted to do it for my own research. I was just really curious as to what this
beer.
Yeah,
the things you do for research.
That's exactly right. And doing kind of this experimental archaeology, and people loved it. People were very curious, and it turned into the program we have now at Avery Ales of Antiquity, where now we've done 8 of those since 2016, and it's kind of become my persona, which I can't complain too much about that. And now I run the Innovation of Wood Cellar program with Colin Quinn, who actually is a CU alumni as well, graduated a couple of years ago. And we do all of these kind of new, cool beers at Avery, which is a great opportunity.
That is a great opportunity. And speaking of cool beers, we'll have a
toast
to some of your wares.
Thank you very much.
Talk.
Cheers.
The ancient world, the Romans, the Greeks, the Egyptians, beer was part of their culture. What have you learned about them?
It's really interesting because with the Egyptians and a lot of Near Eastern cultures, you know, you go back to Babylon even, or Gordian area of ancient Turkey, we know they were producing and consuming beer. They write about it fairly regularly, or they talk about it as rations for daily survival. In ancient Egypt, we even have archaeological remains of breweries that we can study. And so the documentation is somewhat there, but, you know, more of the curiosity is trying to figure out exactly how they made these beers and exactly what the ingredients were that were in them. And that's been an interesting exploration. Probably one of the most intriguing things for me about the Egyptians is that a lot of literature that's out there presumes that this beer was just terrible. That because it's ancient, it must have been poorly treated. It was, a lot of times they talk about it being like a porridge-like beer, very thick and viscous.
Sounds appealing.
Yeah, exactly. Very disgusting, right, to drink. And as I was able to continue doing kind of this experimental archaeology, we've started to learn that that's not the case. I mean, when we started the program of Ales of Antiquity here, I had to own up to the rest of the production staff and the management being like, these could be terrible and we're going to have to destroy them. Nobody's going to want to drink them, you know. But in trying to literally recreate history, or at least pay homage to history in some way, we stuck to our guns of making them as close as we could to the ancient beers. And none of them have been unpalatable. Every one of them has been really quite tasty. And what I found interesting would be a whole separate study is all 8 of them, somebody at some point has told me was their favorite of the Ales of Antiquity series. And I keep wondering, like, what's your genetic background? I wonder if because it's Israeli, maybe your ancestors came from that area, or Scandinavia, maybe they came from Norway or something. So that's been interesting to find out for sure.
It would seem like there's probably not a recipe book of beer, so you probably have to fill in a fair amount of gaps. But how do you go about finding the recipes, recreating them?
100% correct. It's really not until we get into, I would say, in the last maybe 400 or 500 years, you can maybe say as far back as maybe 900 years ago that we start to see recipes, but a lot of those are trickling out of the monastic tradition. You know, they're coming from ancient monasteries, and as a result of that, it is kind of an eclectic, multi-layered approach to the field. Some other individuals have tried to rely very heavily on science, and obviously I can't do it without the science. But at the same time, science doesn't always answer everything. In particular, a lot of times when we analyze ancient vessels for what kind of organic material is left behind in them, you can get a catalog of all those things that, you know, this is a vessel that had these kinds of grains in it, maybe honey, all of these things. But a lot of times if you were to take that and then to say that's the recipe for beer, that's almost operating on the presumption that, like, the beer we're drinking right now, that we would drink this beer and throw the cup away, you know? And 2,000 years later, somebody digs the cup up and analyzes it and said, oh, look, that's the ingredients that were in that beer. Of course, those vessels were used time and time and time again. And therefore, you do have to look at the art history, the anthropology, the architecture, the religion, the literature, all of that plays into it. And also, because I have been traveling the world so much doing this project, I often will approach it almost like an ethnographic study as well, because especially when you get into certain parts of the world, you can observe what people are doing now and still learn things about their history, because some of them are, you know, so so kind of culturally similar still, or at least there are old trends that have lasted for hundreds of years. You can track that back and eventually find the fine spot for where it came from. You asked also earlier, you know, what have I learned in this process? Well, a lot of literature they put out there presumed that the Greeks and Romans didn't drink beer. And that's actually what kind of sparked the whole project for me. I was really irritated by that statement simply because I thought it was just way too easy. It was way too simple. And the reason that answer was being produced was because they weren't writing about it in their literature. Or if they did, they would say it was bad and you should drink wine instead. And one thing that I like to tell my audiences usually when I'm giving talks on this is we also have to remember that for the Greeks and Romans, only the upper 1% of their population was literate. And can you imagine if we left it up to the upper 1% of our population to write all of our history and talk about all of our food? It's going to be very jaded and skewed. So you got to dig in and really get in there to figure it out.
So when I was at CU Boulder, I learned a thing or two about beer, but one particularly inside the classroom. What are your students learn in your courses about it?
Sure. With it, I mean, one thing that maybe makes me hopefully an approachable professor and maybe makes my classes feel a little bit quicker is that they do know I work here. I don't hide that from anybody. It'd be really difficult to at this point. And I think they almost anticipated. I mean, one thing that I hope to offer at some point at the university would be a course on beer history, because I've spent pretty much every last waking minute of the last 6 years now, almost seven, researching the topic, and there's a lot to be said and there's a lot to be done. And obviously, eventually, hopefully some of my students will go on to keep doing it. But a lot of things they learn, it's really easy to work it into a lot of my courses. I mean, for teaching Egyptian art and archaeology, I gave a whole lecture on beer in the pre-dynastic and era of Egypt and the Old Kingdom, basically from 3500 to 2500 BCE. And I think it was my most popular lecture so far this semester. Had a lot of people show up for that one. I especially working now, I teach a course on Pompeii this semester, and I've done a lot of research in the Bay of Naples on beer production, alcohol production in general. And right now there's a push within Pompeii. It's kind of the food initiative where they're trying to learn more and more about what was being produced there in this port town, yet a town that was very affluent with very wealthy villas. And we bring that up in there too, and I talk quite a bit about that. My course on ancient sports that I'm also teaching this semester, concessions aren't a new thing, you know. And in talking about the Olympics or the crown games or gladiatorial combats in an arena somewhere, namely the Colosseum, people were getting concessions. They were drinking alcohol, beer, wine, those kinds of things. And I think people are they like learning. My students, I think, are enjoying realizing that we're not that different than the ancients. We just do it differently than they do now.
It's interesting that you touched on earlier, it's really a multidisciplinary approach.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that really interestingly, getting to meet when we did the CU Next program a couple of weeks ago, I got to meet Mr. DiStefano and backstage, and we were talking before that because he came out and I kind of kicked the whole event off. And talking to him backstage, he noted that I guess I hadn't really thought as much about myself as this multidisciplinary person, because, you know, when you get wrapped up in the academia, which I love being a part of, you get very focused on what you do and what you teach. It's like, no, I'm a classics professor. This is what I do. But then as we were having this conversation backstage over a beverage while we were waiting to go out, it was really quite cool to have him put it in that regard. He said that he thinks that is really the future of education anymore, where it's, you're not going to see a lot of people that just sit in an office forever researching just one text or one author, that there is this approach that's multidisciplinary and multifaceted, and you kind of have to be skilled in several different areas to do that. And I think with what I've done that I didn't intend to be unique but came out to be unique is, a lot of times I think people go into the kind of the white collar side of academics, and they live there, and we do live in books a lot, and I do spend a lot of my time living in books. But at the same time, the thing that I love about working at a brewery, and I don't want to stop working either, I get asked that all the time, when are you going to give one up, you know, is that it is, there is kind of that blue collar aspect to it, but it's very hands on and it's very experimental.
Your research has taken you all over the world. What are some of the What are some of your most favorite trips that you've taken, things that you've learned?
Yeah, it has taken me kind of all over the place, and I'm really lucky that my wife loves to travel, so she gets excited whenever I'm getting ready to go off on another, you know, beer history excursion. I would say some of the most notable really was when I was really trying to work on this ancient beer aspect in Greece. And my wife and I spent a month over in Turkey and then in Greece doing some research and some work, actually during our honeymoon, actually. So she's an academic as well, so she's okay with that. But there was kind of this epiphany moment where I felt like maybe I was trying to overextend and maybe I was digging too hard to try to find beer in the Greek world. Maybe it just wasn't there, you know? And I thought that was very discouraging, but then I got thinking a little bit more about the chronology I was approaching, and most of what I was looking at was kind of the golden age of Athens and these periods that we know were primarily dictated by very affluent peoples in Athens. And so we started bouncing around some Bronze Age locations, and I think probably one of the most memorable moments I've had on this journey was on the island of Thera, the Cycladic islands of the Aegean. There's an ancient ruin there called the city of Akrotiri that was destroyed probably somewhere between 1450 and 1350 BCE by a volcanic eruption of the island. A handful of residential blocks basically are preserved there, where I found a lot of evidence for beer production, and a lot of it was in the artistry again, but also in what we call archaeobotany and in the actual archaeochemical record. Spiridon Marinatus, who was the founder of the site, head excavator there from the 60s through the mid 70s, kept finding material that was very clearly to me beer production material. But again, because not a lot of people would have that background, he didn't necessarily know that's what he was looking at. He thought it was just maybe their mill broke and they weren't grinding flour perfectly anymore or something along those lines. And to me, it was very clearly, beer and beer production. And so that was a really cool moment. And then as the wonderful story my wife likes to tell is we were in a bookstore on that island. And I mean, it's a tiny little island. And it was literally an archaeology bookstore, a Greek archaeology bookstore. And that there was a guy sitting behind the desk who's probably been sitting there for 30 years, right, and hasn't moved. And I walked up to the desk with the full excavation report history of Akrotiri, and I thought he was going to cry that somebody was finally buying it because it had been sitting there for so long. And reading through those, I started finding a lot of really cool evidence for it. And that was just a really crowning moment for me. The most emotional moment I've ever had in this journey was when I was asked to give a presentation at the World Beer Congress. And yeah, there's something called the World Beer Congress. Takes place every 4 years. And I gave a talk on ancient beer at it. And you couldn't miss them. There were monks sitting in the audience because they were in their full regalia. And after the talk was over, they came up to me and they asked me if I'd be willing to come out and brew with them at their monastery. And I said, sure, where's your monastery at? And they said, it's in central Italy. And I was standing with our marketing director at the time, and he looks at me and goes, you're going to Italy. So Avery sent me out to work with these monks up in Norcia, which was the birthplace of Saint Benedict, who was actually one of the founders of the beer tradition amongst monks. That was really cool. And actually living with them and working with them out there for an extended period of time, they've become good friends of mine. They showed up here and surprised us for the release of that beer of the Ales of Antiquity series. Kept getting these random phone calls from an Italian number and I just kept hanging up. And then finally I get a text, it's like, Travis, it's Father Martin. I'm like, oh, jeez, sorry,
better
Father
take
Martin.
This.
Yeah, better take this. But I'll probably be going back out there in the next couple of years to continue work with them. That was really cool. And then honestly, most recently, I just returned from a research trip that is going to be an upcoming Ale of Antiquity that'll be along Hadrian's Wall in Roman-occupied UK. So basically on the boundary lands between Scotland and England. And why this one I'm so excited about is that I'm actually, more than anything, I'm a Roman archaeologist. It's what I specialize in. And I specialize in the second century CE. And this is exactly where this comes from. And I actually, when I started the research on this, I thought I'd do the Greek and then the Roman. That's what I teach, so that's what you do. But what's been cool about the project is I've ended up working with a lot of other institutions along the way. And so I get pulled in a lot of directions, which I'm totally cool to do. So I'm excited to come back and do a beer for Vindolanda, which is a Roman military camp in the UK that I've been spending many years researching. And yeah, it's been really cool. It's been a lot of fun. And now those ventures, especially in regards to who I'm working with, are going to start going very worldwide because I just signed on to work with a big project. It's going to take me all over the world the next 2 years. So it'll be really cool.
All that empire building and civilization creating must have been thirsty work.
You darn right it was, yeah. As I like to say, I mean, the pyramids were literally built by beer. I mean, that's what they were paid in, was bread and beer. And it wasn't slaves that built them, it was paid people. And that was the hot commodity at that time, was beer.
I'll bet so. How far back do some of the oldest recipes you've explored go?
The oldest beer I've created thus far dates to right around 1800 BCE is where I'd probably land it. Somewhere coming out of the Middle Kingdom into the New Kingdom of ancient Egypt, and that was the Egyptian beer we produced. But we have bounced around. I mean, the ancient Mycenaean beer was 1350, but I've come all the way up to the present as well. I mean, my most recent beer is only 250 years old, which was a really interesting project for me to work on because I was extremely overwhelmed by it, mainly because with George Washington Porter, which is the most recently Ale of Antiquity released just a couple weeks ago. On President's Day. It was perfect timing. Dropped it on President's Day. It was perfect. What was cool about that is I started that project about 2.5 years ago, and being a classics professor and a scholar of that material, it's really hard to study that material. You know what I mean? It's literally foreign to us. I'm in the middle of the United States, and you have to fly to Central Europe to do a lot of research, if not Eastern Europe. But also, we're separated by, in some instances, 4,000 years, if I go all the way back to the beginnings of some of these civilizations, at least their writing and their material. And that can make it a really difficult thing. What I was not prepared for in going down this path of George Washington is there is so much material that is just not being looked at because there's too much material. I mean, the archives, the Fred W. Smith archives at Mount Vernon, where I spent a lot of time, they just have so much that letters and pamphlets and books that come in and stuff that's been cataloged, that they catalog things very quickly and then just gets put in a vault. And unless you want to see this really, really specific thing, it just sits there forever. So it's been a really cool journey to go that full distance, from 1800 BCE all the way up to 1750, really, or 1797 CE for George Washington's.
And was he brewing this beer himself?
He was not, actually. Excellent question. And so in the research for this beer, it took me on a really interesting path because with George Washington, I was very curious about him because I've always been, and I've learned this from a lot of my colleagues in the department, that a lot of us do have a hobby on the side, and typically that hobby is something historical. We like to read something that's not what we do all the time. And Diane Conlon, one of my colleagues in the department, she also likes colonial history, and we were jawing about this over dinner one night here at Avery, actually. And what I found so interesting about it is that we have a recipe from George Washington. He calls it a small beer. Now, small beer was regularly produced in this period of colonial America, but it's not that appealing, to be honest. It was basically heated water that they put molasses in, put hops in it, and ferment it. So there's no grain in it, had no body to it. And what the presumption seems to be is that this beer was probably produced by enslaved peoples on his estate for other enslaved peoples, because Washington did own a lot of slaves, or at least he was willed many slaves over his lifetime, a very different period in our history, obviously, than we're at now. It's an interesting one. I did a release of this beer a couple of weeks ago, did a big dinner at Avery for it, where we paired it with the historic foods that were appropriate to the time and everything. And that's a big question I get asked. I got asked it last night at a talk at Denver Museum of Nature and Science. How do you handle someone like George Washington when you know these things about him? I said, well, it is a challenge. You can still respect and be inspired by someone who's done terrible things, but sometimes it's really difficult to do that, and he had the opportunity to free the slaves and he didn't, and so those are things that are discussed. But regardless, back to the porter, that's what he drank, and we have no reference anywhere that he produced it. And so the journey to produce George Washington Porter was actually just as challenging when it came down to the wire as some of these other beers, because I had to figure out where he was buying it and where those people were buying it and what those brewers were producing, how they learned it, and in fact what the great ingredients were and the process was for it. He was buying this beer from Alexandria, right outside of Washington, D.C. He's buying it from Philadelphia as well. But it was just a really cool excursion to go on that path. I mean, one of my favorite anecdotes about George Washington Porter that I found was early in his presidency, he made a courtesy call to Ben Franklin up in Philadelphia. And Ben was well on in his years. I mean, he didn't have much time left. And Ben Franklin cracked open, as it says in the letter, a cask of dark beer for the arrival of the president. And so we know that at least at that time, GW was pretty into that porter. So it was a lot of fun producing this newest Ale of Antiquity. Yeah.
Ben Franklin, who supposedly famously said that beer was proof that God loves us and wants us to be happy. I've seen that's been disputed, but I choose to believe it.
I agree with it 100%. Yeah.
How did the release of George Washington Porter go over?
It went really, really well. I mean, with the Ale of Antiquity series, or Ales of Antiquity series, when we started it, like I said, you know, back in 2016, it was more for research, and we would do just limited releases of it. It would just be a beer we'd keg out, be on draft at the Avery Tap Room. You couldn't really get it outside of here unless I was traveling, doing an event somewhere, and I would take it with me. But we decided for this one, because there's been enough interest in learning the history behind it, behind these beers, because it is a part of human history, to can it. And so this is the first one that went into cans. We did a really limited can release of it, but it is on sale at the Avery Tap Room again, as a trial again to see how it does. I've already been approached and asked by Avery, am I okay letting it go outside of Avery? I'm like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? Of course I am. This is what I've wanted to do since the beginning. And so it's been going very, very well. So well, in fact, that we're probably, it ain't going to last too much longer. Not a bad problem to have.
Yeah, we better pick some up on our way out.
That's right.
Who knew the history of beer could be so fascinating? So much so that we'll pick this up again for May's podcast. A big thank you to Professor Travis Rupp and to the Avery Brewing Company for hosting us today. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the air next month.
The University of Colorado comprises four campuses: Boulder, Colorado Springs, Denver, and the CU Anschutz Medical Campus in Aurora. To learn more about CU, go to www.cu.edu.
Thanks to our producer, Kathy Buten, and audio engineer, John Arnold.
University of Colorado.